This piece was brought to you by the International Culinary Center, culinarycenter.com.
I'm Jessica Harris, and welcome to my welcome table. Gather around this special table. It's scarred with memories, pitted with burn spots from hot skillets, and decorated with moisture rings from frosty glasses of lemonade, beer bottles, bourbon and ginger ale, and untold goblets of red wine. This table will be our flying carpet as we travel around the world. I'll share some of my secret spots. We'll meet new friends and reconnect with old ones. Sometimes, the table will be covered with fine Porthot linen and my mother's bone china, and we'll sup on caviar and champagne. Other times, we'll cover it with yesterday's news and hanker down for a crawfish boil or a lobster supper. Whatever the meal, by the end of our time together, we'll have shared some special friends, sacred spots, and the food, drink, and music that connects them. So come, join me at my welcome table.
Hi, my name's Mitzi Pratt, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
I'm Patrick Dunn, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is John Barkley, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is Anne McBride, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
I'm Betty Fussell, and I, too, am sitting at the welcome table.
...43.7 degrees north, 7.35 degrees east. The Riviera. Part 1. Nice, France.
The Riviera. On every street a gay casino, where continentals sip their vino and leave their fortunes to chance. The Riviera, where matrons draped in Paris fashions prolong the twilight of their passions in mad pursuit of romance. Every gay mademoiselle is disarming some Maharaja with the daring of her décolletage. Life is so completely zany and free. By the Mediterranean Sea.
Okay, let me get the bad pun out of the way. Nice is nice. I'm sure that's what the French must have thought in the latter half of the 19th century when the Casino of Monte Carlo was rebuilt by Charles Garnier, the architect of the old Paris Opera House, and began winter tourism to what the French know as the Côte d'Azur, the Azure Coast. Certainly, in the depths of January, February, and March, the sky may on occasion be less than brilliant blue, and only the extremely hardy venture onto the pebble beaches that surprise tourists expecting sand with their sun. But then, there are those days when the breezes known as the Mistral have cleared the air, when sky and water present a palette that offers shades of cerulean and turquoise, aquamarine and ultramarine, that are quite simply breathtakingly beautiful. It must have been these colors and the temperate climate that enticed the Massaloids to establish settlements in what would become the towns of Nice, Antibes, Saint-Tropez, and Hyères in the 4th to 5th centuries BC. By 49 BC, Julius Caesar is visiting the region and has established a settlement at Fréjus, earning the region another name, Provence, from Provincia Romana, or Province of Rome. Today, though, Provence has migrated a tad west, and the Côte d'Azur is considered to begin at Toulon, capital of the Var département, and run beyond Nice, capital of the département known as Alpes-Maritimes, to the border of Monaco. Nice, though, is the entry point to the area for most travelers and encapsulates much of the region's past and present. One of the cultural hubs of the region, Nice offers many views for any lovers of old times and old ways, as well as for those who want their venues as up-to-date as the city's performing arts center. Art lovers will delight in museums that honor Matisse and Chagall, and will be thrilled in the Museum of Modern and Contemporary Art that has the largest collection assembled in France of the works of Niki de Saint-Phalle. Flâneurs, will simply love strolling along the Promenade des Anglais and watching jogglers, cyclists, and others as they savor their beachfront. For those who are as market-crazed as I willingly admit to being, the place to head is Old Nice and the Cours Saléa. There, even in the dead of winter, the flower market flourishes. In January, the place is awash in fragrant blooms of hyacinths and anemones, and tulips are available. Small citrus trees abound, oranges, limes, lemons, and grapefruit for planting in the terracotta pots and olive jars that have become a part of the area's decorative ethos. If I could have figured out how to get one back to Paris and thence to New York or New Orleans, I'd have had one of those orange trees. But the wiser angels prevailed. Early in the year, though, it is the mimosa that takes the spotlight. The tiny, faintly fragrant, fuzzy balls of bright yellow symbolize the promise of spring to come for many French in much the same way that the first crocuses poking up for the snow do for we denizens of the United States Northeast.
Il y a tout au long des marchés de Provence qui sentent le matin, la mer et le midi, des parfums de fenouil, melons et céleri.
The Cours Saléa is in many ways the spiritual heart of Old Nice. Old Nice demonstrates architecturally and in its layout the proximity to North Africa across the Mediterranean. Buildings seem to lean against each other, at times creating narrow alleyways that almost block out the sun. These are there, and they're usually interspersed with squares, occasionally anchored by a neighborhood church where local folk could congregate. The Cours Saléa is a strip of market at the waterside edge of the old town. The flower stalls are only the beginning of the market. Even on a non-market day, vendors hawk their wares. Heirloom tomatoes, citrus fruit, radishes, broccoli, mushrooms, different mixes of salad greens, or mesclun. I also learned that the word that is now ubiquitous on American menus simply means mixture in the Niçoise dialect. There are also sun-dried tomatoes and more. One woman is selling vegetables cut up and ready to add to a soup au pistou or a minestrone, and she addresses the shoppers in Italian, reminding of the border's proximity. There are seafood sellers with fish that recalls the bounty of the Mediterranean, racasse, rouget, loup, and more. Arrow straight, the Cours Saléa is bounded on either side by small boutiques and by restaurants and cafes where, in temperate weather, folks sit out, catch up on news, and rest from their market chores. Often, while people watching, there is nibbling going on, and one of the best things to eat while wandering through the market is soca, a crepe of chickpea flour, olive oil, salt, and water that is served warm and usually consumed accompanied by a glass, or two, of local wine. There are dueling vendors of soca who have no problem with denigrating the efforts of their competitors and declaring their soca best. The Cours Saléa may be the centerpiece of Old Nice, but the side streets that wind and twist like Tangier's souks also offer treats for the culinarily inclined. Small boutiques offer homemade pasta and accompanying sauces, including a tray of small, greenish lozenges that was called rather graphically caca di cani, dog poo, with the earthiness that some markets revel in. In more clement months, there are ice cream and sorbet vendors offering flavors like lavender, rose, and lemon verbena flavored ice cream and sorbets tasting of mint, watermelon, passion fruit, tomato basil, and pastis. A few blocks in another direction on the Rue Saint-François de Paul, Nice's legendary confectioner, Maison Auer, stands in all of its Art Nouveau glory. Established in 1820, the shop sells chocolates and candied chestnuts, but also all of the candied fruit that is a hallmark of holiday cooking in the region. There are candied violets and candied rose petals, as well as liqueurs made from roses, violets, lavender, poppies, and more. Then there are the nougats that are included in the 13 desserts that are a traditional part of all Provençal Christmas tables. There are also candied orange peels, known as orangettes. Dipped in dark chocolate or plain, they are another local specialty. Finally, there are the pâtes de fruits that are my favorites, densely flavored fruit jellies that seem to transport all of Nice's sunshine with them, even when eaten in New York under a leaden winter sky. Another of the hallmarks of Provençal cuisine are olives. The routes out of town heading into the hills in the backcountry above Nice are bordered with olive trees, and virtually anyone with a small plot of land is growing a tree and making their own olive oil. For those who are not fortunate enough to have their own trees, across the street from Auer, there is Alziari, where all things olive are available, ranging from a variety of oils with different flavors and different appellations d'origine contrôlée to the olives themselves that are sold by the pound and that can be packaged and sealed in such a way that they are transportable. I would learn a lot more about olives later as I left Nice and journeyed into the hills overlooking the city, but Alziari was a great introduction, not to mention a good stopping shop. If you're not sure whether you can transport olives or the oil, there are olive wood mills for grinding the Herbe de Provence that are there available as well. They're a variant of the classic mix of thyme, rosemary, tarragon, marjoram, basil, and lavender is a wonderful gift, and the Herbe de Provence themselves are a hallmark of Provençal cooking. With summer barbecues a far-off promise, it wasn't a bad time to stock up. So I did. They were light, and they made perfect gifts for friends who are culinarily inclined, especially when packaged in brightly hued bags of Provençal fabric, like those made popular by Suliado in the 1970s and 1980s. They feature olive branches, lavender, poppies, and more in their designs, and are delightful. And so far, no friend has turned a nose up at receiving them as a gift. The fabric is another souvenir of the region, and tablecloths, placemats, and more are available as well. On Mondays, the Cours Saleya is given over to antique dealers and becomes the Provençal flea market of my dreams. Of my dreams, that is, until I can make it to Lille-sur-Sorgue, but that's another story. Unfortunately, this time, my departure was scheduled for Sunday, so that market had to be missed. But I did get a peek into one or two boutiques where the array of goods was enticement for another trip. Anybody who knows me knows that while I'm a sucker for open-air markets and antique shops, I'm also a pushover for hardware stores, stationery boutiques, and bookshops, and all can be found in proximity to the Cours Saleya. At the former, there are all manner of polishes designed to keep copper pots bright and shiny, along with my favorite French method that I learned when I lived with family in Paris in the 1960s, simply lemon juice and salt. The hardware stores also have waxes designed to keep antique chestnut tables mirror-shined, and so I stock up, ignoring airline weight limitations. Stationery shops offer Clairefontaine books with the grid lines that young French children use to learn to write in script, and the file folders that are known as classeurs. Bookstores present such a problem that they are usually followed by a trip to a department store for additional luggage. in Nice, it was about books on decorative arts from the region. Some works by Provençal writers, ranging from Marc Pagnol and Alphonse Daudet to Frédéric Mistral. Although not as well known as the area's links to the plastic arts, the Côte d'Azur has long been a writer's paradise as well. Guy de Maupassant, André Gide, and Colette found both refuge and inspiration there, as did Edith Wharton, who wrote parts of The Age of Innocence in Hier, and Catherine Mansfeld, who wrote enchantingly of Montand in her journals. At some point, though, I've just got to remind myself not only about the always threatening weight restrictions, but also about the fact that my stateside life is far from minimalist and already dangerously stretching the limits of weight-bearing floors. But there's always room for just a tiny pamphlet about Provençal jewelry, or about the boutis or quilts that are typical of the region and that are on my most wanted list. Nice is, in fact, my first stop in a foray into the world of the South. Before the journey is over, I will visit with my college friend Dana Sardé, who married a Frenchman and is lucky enough to live in a medieval village. She has spent much of her adult life documenting the region's special spots. With her as a guide, we'll journey to Grasse to visit the Fragonard Museum and learn about not only how the perfume industry transformed the region in the 19th century, but also visit the Provençal Museum of Costume and Jewelry to find out more about those boutis and the quilted skirts that form a part of the traditional dress of Provence. We'll investigate olives, the different flavors of oils, and just how they're produced. And we'll stop at several of the villages perchés that cling precariously on the hills and offer stunning views and a taste of the region's medieval history. It's essential for any food lover to visit the Escoffier Museum and learn about the man who transformed the modern professional kitchen. Finally, I'll journey down my own personal memory lane and stop in Saint-Paul-de-Vence for a peek at the legendary Boule Ground where Yves Montand held court and played with his friends across from the entrance to La Colombe d'Or, the legendary hostelry that was the epicenter of life in that town in the 1960s, when it was host to such notables as Picasso, the Rolling Stones, Quincy Jones, César, for whom the French Oscars are named, Sidney Poitier, Frank Sinatra, and more. In short, the literati and glitterati of the second half of the 20th century from two continents. Back in the day, I spent a memorable week there with James Baldwin and his friends when I was in my 20s. So, until next time, be it on the Côte d'Azur or elsewhere.
Keep my skillet good and greasy when I'm gone, gone, gone. Keep my skillet good and greasy when I'm gone.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.